All right, well, it comes to being elected. Good morning to you again, and I hope you've got your Bibles with you. Turn with me to Exodus chapter 2. We'll be looking at verses 11 to 25. I hope you've got your Bibles with you, and this is part two of chapter 2. As we begin this exciting book, you and I know that it is a story about Moses most of the time, and how Moses is being used by God to reveal God to an idolatrous nation. The Israelites, they were not angels. Well, for the longest time, I've always thought that this poor group of angels was suffering under the slavery of the Egyptians. But they were not. They were steeped into idolatry. And God wanted to just wipe them all out while they were in Egypt. But no. Because you remember his covenant with Abraham, which we have just read. And God brought them out of Egypt into the wilderness. And God gradually revealed himself through Moses, through the law, and then through the tabernacle, which we will discover. Bit by bit, God is going to reveal to them his great redemption plan. And the climax of that plan is the coming of the Messiah. Everything in the scripture points to the coming of the Messiah. So today, as we continue this part two of our study, verse 11, as we have said in our last study, that it is kind of like a fast forward from verse 10 to 11. In between, 35 years have passed. 35 years have passed. And we saw how Moses himself refused the throne of Egypt. A decision he made by faith and to call Yahweh his God and to be identified with the Israelites. And this decision can be traced back probably to the first 5 years he spent with his mother, Jochebed. Up to this point in our study, we have also seen how Moses resembled Jesus in many ways. We call this a typology. And God is using the life of Moses to point to the coming Messiah. Because we saw how in the life of Moses, Pharaoh tried to kill Moses just as Herod tried to kill Jesus. But who were delivered in order to become deliverers themselves? They were deliverers. And we're going to see many of more such similarities or such typologies as we go through this amazing book. And I will only highlight the obvious ones, which straight away is coming up in our study this morning. Verse 11 of Exodus chapter 2. Verse 11 and 12. One day, after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were and watched them at their hard labor. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own people. Verse 12. Looking this way and that, and seeing no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. Moses knew in his heart that he was spared from being drowned in the river for a reason, and that is to help the Hebrews, to deliver the Hebrews, his own people who were treated harshly as slaves by the Egyptians. Now, this term Hebrew, and we're gonna encounter this term many times in the book of Exodus. And this term Hebrew was last used in Exodus in verses 6 and 7. And that was the story of his birth. And it is only to confirm to us that Moses is Hebrew. And this term Hebrew is important. It is an important term because it helps us to understand who they are, the uniqueness of being a Hebrew. The second part of this term, it will tell us why the world is hostile toward the Hebrews. And until today, the world hates Hebrews. But the term Hebrew is very unique. It identifies a unique group of people. How many of you are Hebrews? I know you're brew tea, but you're he, a man brewing the tea, the coffee, does not make you a Hebrew, right? What is a Hebrew? In the original language, the term Hebrew means an Amorite. That is another word for Hebrew. Or a descendant of Ever. That's not going to be helpful. But what is interesting is that this term was used only 34 times in the whole of the Old Testament. 34 times. And 14 of those instances that were used in the book of Exodus. Exodus. No other book comes close to it. Maybe perhaps 1 Samuel, where it was used 8 times. 8 times. So, what does this tell us? It tells us that beginning with the book of Exodus, God is highlighting to all of us, asking us to pay attention to the uniqueness of this group of people, and also to understand why they are hated. Even today, more so today, we keep reading of anti-Semitism. Many of the Jews today are thinking of returning to Israel. That's the reason. Now it's my habit, and I'm going to throw out a quiz to all of you. We need to pay a very close attention to the questions. Two questions. First question is, why are the Hebrews hated by the world? Why are the Hebrews hated by the world? And if you try to answer this question, try not to do it in more than 20 words. Right? If you have a long thesis, I got no time to read that. And even if I do, I won't understand it. 20 words. Tell me, why are the Hebrews hated by the world? Now, the first question is easy. Right? It's easy. You probably can't Google it. You try AI, ChatGPT, whatever you want to try. It's not going to tell you. Right? Because I'm trying. Just to check. And it doesn't work. So that's the good news. But it's the easier part of this quiz. Second question. It's tougher. Give me three names of Hebrews. Who are they? Who are the people who are hated for the original reason in verse 1? If you understand verse 1, then you can get on to verse 2. But verse 2, the second question is tougher. You do need to give me biblical support, some Bible references to make sure you understand the question. All right, so these are the two questions, and I don't know, I may not be able to phrase it clearly, but this is the best I can do, right? And this quiz will end when we get on to the next study. The next time I come back, it'll be about 4 weeks from now. So you've got 4 weeks, but each of you only have one shot. You can try once. It's not kind of like multiple times you can try. And again, it's my habit to encourage you by giving you a McDonald's meal voucher. So each question will have only one voucher. If the first person comes up with the correct answer, then the first question is out. No more voucher. Second one also another voucher. So there are two vouchers here, our programs. So have a go at it. You can either tell me in person or you can text me and give me your answer. One person, one try. Okay, all right. So coming back to chapter two, talking about Hebrew. And second question, three names. Of course, Abraham was one of them. He was the first person to be called in Hebrew. Am I correct? We all know that. So now you only need to think of the next two names. Right?
Okay.
Abraham, being a Hebrew, is still very much revered by many people groups today as their ancestor. And some of his descendants today are called by some interchangeable terms. And these terms are rather confusing. So let me help you out a bit to define what's a Hebrew, what's an Israelite, what's a Jew. Some of you are pretty clever, you might already know this. That the Hebrew is a general term emphasizing that they are all descendants of Abraham, Genesis chapter 14. If you're a descendant of Abraham, you are technically a Hebrew. The next term, an Israelite. It is a covenantal term, a national identity for those who come from the line of Jacob. Because Jacob's name was later changed to Israel. And that's why his descendants are called Israelites. So everyone that comes from the 12 tribes are called Israelites, 12 tribes. The last term is a Jew. A Jew. A Jew technically comes from the tribe of Judah, only Judah. But today, this term is being used loosely and widely include all other Israelites, especially after the Babylonian exile. Because most of the people that returned were from the tribe of Judah. So they are called Jews as well. Now, if this is a bit confusing, let me give you a pictorial form of it. Maybe it would be helpful. Take a look at this. The Hebrew is a larger group. But within this Hebrew group, there's a smaller group called the Israelites from the tribe or from the descendants of Jacob. And from the 12 tribes, a smaller group is called, they are called Jews from the tribe of Judah. Is this okay? All right. So if you remember this, it will help, be helpful. We see another term here that is his own people. This phrase in the King James Version is brethren, brethren, which I like better. But this word was used twice in verse 11, telling us about the love of Moses for his own people, the love of Moses for his brethren. And this love was, well, you can say ignited when he saw this Egyptian beating up a Hebrew. Because this Hebrew was his own people, he chose it. And in a strange way, in our study from here onwards, you will find that while this was the first expression of Moses' love for his people, soon he's going to realize that he's loving a group of stubborn, stiff-necked people. And how he can love them, I really don't know. It's tough. But yet, his love only grew stronger. And this again reminded us of how Jesus, who came to his own, and his own received him not, but Jesus, yet Jesus gave up his own life willingly for that. Why? To free them from the bondage of sin. And verse 12 tells us that when Moses saw that his people were oppressed, there was this thing welling up in him that he wants to free his own people. He wants to free his own people from this slavery. So in his own way and in his own time, Moses looked to the left, then he looked to the right. And he saw that no one was looking. And he followed his flesh. Moses killed and buried the Egyptian in the sand. This mistake, the mistake that Moses made was that he forgot to look up because God was watching. And something Moses never expected is about to happen. We find that in verses 13 and 14. Exodus chapter 2, verse 13 reads. The next day, he went out and saw two Hebrews fighting. He asked the one in the wrong, "Why are you hitting your fellow Hebrew?" The man said, "Who made you ruler and judge over us? Are you thinking of killing me as you killed the Egyptian?" Then Moses was afraid and thought, "What I did must have become known." So the next day, Moses went to the slave camp of the Hebrews again, and he saw two Hebrew slaves fighting each other, and Moses stepped in to stop the fight and questioning the aggressor as to why he was causing this fight. Moses was shocked. He was stunned because this man not only questioned Moses' authority, but he knew Moses had killed the Egyptian the previous day. Now, only the person whom Moses saved the previous day knew about it. No one else was around. Yet, it has now become public knowledge what he did the day before. And if Moses, and sorry, if the Hebrews were talking this openly about the murder, then eventually the news will get back to Pharaoh. What is also troubling to Moses was that he now realizes that the Hebrews are not willing to accept his leadership. But we need to pause for a question. By killing the Egyptian, was Moses hoping that the Hebrews would accept him as their God-sent leader, or as the leader God had appointed? Was there the next man? We find the answer in Acts chapter 7. Acts chapter 7, verses 22 to 25. Stephen gave it in his very long sermon before he was stoned to death. Verse 22 tells us, "And Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and was mighty in words and in deeds. And when he was 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel." Verse 24, "And seeing one of them suffer wrong, he defended him and avenged him that was oppressed, and smote the Egyptian. For he supposed his brother would have understood how God by his hand would deliver them, but they understood not." So a couple of words here that is important. And first one is the word defended. And in verse 25, he supposed, in the NLT, it's the word assumed. He assumed that they knew that God had sent him and they would realize that God is going to use Moses by Moses' hand, by his hand. They will be delivered. From this couple of verses, Stephen gives us a couple of clues from God's perspective. Understand, this is from God's perspective, that Moses, by the age of 40, was not only well-educated and well-trained in the matters of the palace, but he was also well-trained, probably militarily. He was like a soldier. And what is it that we can learn from here? Firstly, verse 23 tells us that it came into his heart. It came into his heart to visit his brethren. It means that God has moved his heart to establish contact or to be connected, reconnected with his fellow Hebrews. And this phrase, "it came into his heart," was the same phrase that's used also in 2 Chronicles chapter 7, verse 11. 2 Chronicles chapter 7, verse 11. When God moved Solomon's heart to build the temple. So we can know from here that, yes, God did move Moses to be identified with the Israelites, with the Hebrews. The second thing we can know is that from verse 24, verse 24, that Moses didn't murder. Sometimes we have the word kill, but the word kill is rather vague. But he didn't murder the Egyptian, but he defended. He came to the aid of a fellow Hebrew. Now, murder, we know that there are different classifications of murder, premeditated, but here is what we may call justifiable homicide, or what we call self-defense. And this action, we do know, it's not going to benefit Moses at all. But yet, we do find that there are a few commentators who would describe Moses as heroic or even patriotic. Only a few, but most of them would call it impetuous, wrongful, undisciplined, and unjustifiable. So from the context of what we've just read, it appears that Moses was acting by faith. Because in verse 25, that's the third thing we can discover from this passage. that in verse 25, that God had already given a clear call to Moses, calling him to the role of delivering the Israelites out of slavery. But the Israelites did not recognize that he is the deliverer. They didn't recognize him. Just as the Jews did not recognize Jesus when he first came. And you may ask, Pastor John, how did God call Moses? How did God call Moses? The Bible doesn't tell us the how and the when. Did God could have appeared to Moses in a dream, in a vision, or God could have just plainly spoken to Moses with an audible voice? We don't know. Much in the same way God communicated with the patriarchs. But Moses already knew of the promise God made to Abraham. And he now has and am certain. He was very sure that God is calling him to be the deliverer. And Moses wanted to obey. He wanted to obey. Yes, we may say that Moses was miraculous. And his timing was all wrong. And Moses was merely following his flesh and not the spirit. Just like Peter, when Peter tried to protect Jesus with violence, you remember in the Garden of Gethsemane, he drew a sword. And Jesus said, that's not his way. Violence is never his way. So, even after having carried out a heroic act to help his fellow Hebrew, Moses thought that he had won their respect and support. Moses thought that they would be excited and thankful, and that they were all rally behind him and support him, recognizing him as the deliverer God had sent. But no. Moses was expecting God's plan, everything to immediately just fall into place, and then God would wave his magic wand, and then there will be a miraculous open door, and the whole nation would be escaped, will be able to escape. But the Hebrews didn't see Moses as their deliverer. Instead, they mocked and rejected him. And here again, we see the similarity with Jesus, where Jesus was mocked and rejected. But Moses wasn't Jesus. So we ask the question, what went wrong? What went wrong here? We can only say that his heart was in the right place, wanting to deliver his people out of oppression. But he didn't understand the ways of God. He didn't understand the timing of God. For from Acts chapter 7, verse 25, we are told, it's important to take a close look at that verse, that Moses wrongly thought that God is going to deliver the Israelites through his hand. Just like Jacob took everything into his own hands. Take a look at verse 25 again. For he supposed his brethren would have understood how that God by his hand would deliver them. But they did. They understood not. Initially, I thought that it is through God's hand. If it was meant to be through God's hand, then the verse would have read, how by God's hand, it would have been phrased that way. But here it is referring to Moses. Moses think that he had to think of a plan to deliver the Hebrews. But we know that from Exodus chapter 13, verse 9, it is always by God's hand. And that is God's way. Verse 9, Exodus chapter 13 reads, "This observance will be for you like a sign on your hand and a reminder on your forehead that this law of the Lord is to be on your lips. For the Lord brought you out of Egypt with his mighty hand," with his mighty hand. It is always God, and it's God's way of working. And he's not going to share his glory with anyone, not even Moses. The other very important thing here is God's timing. And Moses has got to wait and learn God's timing. The first thing that Moses needed to learn is that the Hebrews were not ready to be delivered. And God was not yet ready to judge the Amorites because the 400 years is not up yet. God said 400 years in Genesis chapter 15, verse 16, and everything will have to move according to God's timetable. That's the tough part, even for all of us. We sometimes pray and we say, "God, you should have done this yesterday." But everything has to move according to God's plan and timetable. That's one of the important biblical principles that you and I need to remember. If you and I can remember and learn this, then you and I can learn and trust God for all things that has happened to us in the past, present, and even for those in the future, both good and bad. We can trust God for everything, especially those that we don't understand why. And we need to have the assurance, the confidence to know that everything, even the bad things that has happened to us, by the time it reaches us, it has already gotten God's approval. It has already gotten God's approval. Second thing Moses needed to learn is that he did not know that even though he was well educated in the ways of Egyptian, God now wants to train him in the wilderness for the next 40 years. And we know Moses spent the next 40 years in the desert of Midian, during which God would train him to be a shepherd. And how did he do? He did very well. After the 40 years, he graduated with a DD. He has got a doctorate in desert. Just like many of the other giants of the faith. David, you remember, when he ran from Saul, he went into the wilderness. And then Paul spent 3 years in the Arabian desert. You can read that up in Galatians chapter 1. And Jesus himself, after his temptation, spent 40 days in the wilderness. So, if the Hebrew people won't support him, Moses knew that he only has one choice left, one choice, and that is to run away from Egypt and from Pharaoh. So, verse 15 tells us, Exodus chapter 2, verse 15 reads, "When Pharaoh heard of this, he tried to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh and went to live in Midian, where he sat down by a well." Moses became a fugitive and fled to the land of the Midianites. And if you remember, the Midianites, they were also descendants of Abraham. What does that mean then? Descendants of Abraham. That makes the Midianites Hebrews. Exactly. Hebrews. All right. So technically, Ishmael, we say he's an Arab, an Egyptian. That's how all the Arabs came from today. Ishmael, technically, he was a Hebrew. And he chose not to be called him. So we find here the Midianites, they were actually descendants of Abraham from Abraham's second wife, Keturah. Read that. You can read that in Genesis chapter 2. Now, sometimes we read this and we get excited. Ah, oh, Abraham got two wives. So can I. Please, check the context. That was after the death of Sarah. I know you have the other thoughts of getting second one, but perish those thoughts. So regardless of whether Moses was impetuous or not, the act of killing the Egyptian now resulted in a complete severance of his ties with Egypt and with Pharaoh. But he's also separated from his own people as well. Let me just give you a quick look at a map of Midian. All right, Midian is here. But if you know today's map, it lies mostly in the Arabian Peninsula. Saudi Arabia is here. So you would find that Moses was probably in the area of Goshen. Goshen, that's right. And then when he fled, he went all the way down to somewhere here in the land of Midian. We'll come back to this map another day when you see that this is the probably the route that they took after they left Egypt in the Exodus, right? So that's how far he ran. Looks like it's a huge distance to be covered, and sometimes fear can make you do a lot of crazy things you thought you cannot do. But the word Midian, it means the place of judgment, the place of judgment. And Moses stopped running only when he reached Midian. And the Bible tells us he came to rest at a well. And if this rings a bell from our previous studies in Genesis, you will know that whenever a traveler comes and stops at a well, something good is going to happen. Something good is about to happen. You remember Eliezer, Abraham's servant, went to look for a wife for Isaac. He came to rest at a well. And then Jacob, when running away from Esau, he too came to a well and met his wife. So if you're looking for a wife, go to a well. No? But I think the spiritual lesson behind it is that the well is really a picture of Jesus, the living water. Right? You go to Jesus and he can sort out your life. Whatever area it is, that's the good news. Go to a well. Or go to that well. Let's continue. And I'm going to read to you verses 16 to 22. What happened after the well? Verse 16. Now, a priest of Midian had seven daughters, and they came to draw water and fill the troughs to water their father's flock. Some shepherds came along and drove them away, but Moses got up and came to their rescue and watered their flock. When the girls returned to Reuel, their father, he asked them, "Why have you returned so early?" They answered, an Egyptian rescuers from the shepherds. He even drew water for us and watered the flock. And where is he? Cranwell asked his daughter. Why have you left? Why did you leave him? Invite him to have something to eat. Verse 21. Moses agreed to stay with the man who gave his daughter Zipporah to Moses in marriage. Zipporah gave birth to a son, and Moses named him Gershon, saying, I have become a foreigner in a foreign land. The seven verses. That's a lot. But you may not realize it. These seven verses covered 40 years. 40 years. God is an amazing story writer. As I was reading this, I tell myself, I can't do it this way. That was very long-winded Chonghei one, you know. Seven verses probably too short. So what does this tell us? That true to the courageous character of Moses, he followed the shepherds who tried to bully the daughters of Reuel. He is the priest of Midian. And we have a problem with this word priest. Is he a priest of the true God? A priest of some idols? But strangely, the name Reuel means friend of God. Friend of God. And in Exodus chapter 3, he's called by another name, Jethro, which probably was his priestly title. And we know that Abraham in James chapter 2, he too was called the friend of God. So the question that we may have is, was Jethro a true worshiper of Yahweh? And the answer is, it is possible, but we don't really know. We can't say with great certainty because we have said earlier that the Midianites were actually also descendants of Abraham. So we find here, Reuel offered Moses the hospitality of their home, and he found Moses to be a decent guy, just as he expected. And Moses never left that house, but married one of his daughters, Zipporah, who bore Moses his son, Gershon. And Gershon means a refugee, an exile. And sometimes we think it is the word foreigner. It's more than a foreigner. He's more than a foreigner. He was driven out. He was driven away. In the dictionary, in fact, they use the word divorce. It's an interesting study of Moses' position at this point. He was expelled. That was how Moses felt all these 40 years. From verses 23 to 25. But then in the next three verses, 23 to 25, those three verses will take us right back to Egypt, to the slavery of the Hebrews. And altogether, we only have 10 verses, 7 describing 40 years of Moses' life in Midian, and then 3 years we are going to go right back into Egypt. So the question before us is, why these 7 verses? Out of all his life for 40 years, why is this 7 verses so important? This event at the well, and then he got married and with a son. Must be many other things that happened in that 40 years? Not really. He was out in the field for the 4 years looking at sheep. And you know what sheep are like? Stubborn and mostly stupid. Just like me. Just like you. That was how he spent his 4 years. But what is so special about this single event? And the answer is always for us to look back. If you want the answer, always look back to the great redemption plan of God. And in this seven verses, in this particular event, John is focused and he's tracking the thin red line all the way from Genesis to Revelation. There is this thin red line. Red because it is the blood of Jesus that we're tracking. And that line will tell us about his plan. And his plan is not only very precise, but God had planned it even before the foundation of the world. It had all been planned. And this is the reason why you and I, today we can have confidence and hope for our future. The God of the Bible, not in this chaotic, crummy world that we have today, but in a God who has planned everything for our welfare. And by his power, he can make it work. He can make it happen. What a great talk for us every day, especially for me to wake up each morning, know that I have this God who has planned and he is in control and he has the power to do it. So as we look at all this, we ask this one question. Which part of redemption history we are looking at here? Which part of redemption history? We can see here from the name of his first born, Moses felt that he would have been rejected, expelled, driven away by his own people. But 40 years later, Moses is going to return to deliver his people. But for now, Moses will have to work amongst the Gentiles, live amongst the Gentiles with his Gentile bride, Zipporah. You know what's the name of the meaning of the word Zipporah? Anybody? No price. Zipporah means bird. Bird. I think that's significant because here we have a picture of Jesus also being rejected and then later on killed, but even he was killed. He's now in heaven, seated at the right hand of God. But in the meantime, Jesus is also working with his Gentile bride, which is us, the church. And you and I, we've been given the bird, the dove. It's a picture of the Holy Spirit. And Jesus is also coming back again very soon to reclaim what belongs to him. This world actually belongs to him. And he's going to rule this world with his people. And again, that's us. I hope you're excited. So here we have, this sums up Moses' 40 years, his second 40 years in Midian. But we're told during that 40 years, verse 23 to 25, during that long period, the king of Egypt died. The Israelites groaned in their slavery and cried out, but their cry for help. And their cry for help because of their slavery went up to God. God heard their groaning, and he remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. Verse 25. So God looked on the Israelites and was concerned about them. So another 40 years have passed. Pharaoh died, the old Pharaoh died. And Moses is now happily settled into his new life in Midian with his wife Zipporah and son Gershon. But the Israelites were groaning, desperately crying out loudly for help, because the torture of their slavery has become unbearable. And the Lord heard their groaning, their cry, and he remembered his covenant with Abraham. Now, let's take a look at the word groaning in verse 24. It means a groan, or to cry out loudly, and it's used only four times in a whole Bible, four times. And each time we see that it is used to describe the cries of evil people, disobedient people. Three of those instances, they were used for the Jews. Only once it was used for Pharaoh. But in all, they were used to describe disobedient, evil people who were groaning. Now, there are many Bible commentators would like to equate this groaning with their prayers to God. Their prayers to God. But we see from here that in the usage, they were not crying out to God. They were merely crying out. That's all. They were all crying out. They were not prayers directed to God. Whenever we see this, we need to remember that in the last days, Book of Revelation tells us that when tribulation comes, many will groan, and they will grit their teeth and shake their hands at God, refusing to submit. They will still refuse to submit. That's the idea of the word groan here. The other thing we need to see here is whenever we read in the Bible, when the Bible uses human body parts or functions describing God, it is what we call anthropomorphism. It is describing God in terms that you and I can understand, because God is all spirit. He doesn't have ears, but he can hear. He doesn't have eyes like we do, but he can see. And God doesn't forget anything. God doesn't forget anything. He doesn't like us. We sometimes will show senior moments, dementia, but God doesn't have this problem. Everything that has happened in the past, present, and the future is right before him, and he knows everything. Meaning, everything that's going on in your life and my life, including things that's going on in this world, God knows. And they have his attention. They have his attention. But what is frightening here is that if you were to read Job chapter 24, verse 12, that for most of the evil people, you can groan all you like, you can cry all you like. But verse 12 tells us, God ignores their groaning. God ignores their groaning. So if sometimes you ask the question, why is God not answering my prayer? It's a good time to check your heart and your relationship with God. So if we put these two words together, God can hear, God can remember, then these two words is telling us that God is now about to act. And while they heard the cries of the Israelites, it is not their cries that caused him to act. It was that he remembered his covenant, his promise to the patriarchs to free Israel. So what's going to happen? What is God going to do? And just when Moses was getting comfortable in Midian, God is about to mobilize him, which we'll pick up in our next study. But for now, today, as you and I sit here, we have to ask this question. What is God saying to me today? What is God saying to me today? If we look at the life of Moses for the first 40 years of his life. He was born, raised as a Hebrew, and even though educated in the ways of Egypt. But at the end of the 40 years, he willingly refused the throne of Egypt. He willingly refused the throne of Egypt. And he chose, Hebrews chapter 11 tells us, he chose to be identified with Yahweh and with his own people. In verse 27 of Hebrews 11 tells us, he left Egypt. He left Egypt. And if Egypt is a picture of the world, then we see Moses here, he separated himself from the world. Just like Moses. Today, we need to separate ourselves from the world. We need to separate ourselves from the world. Just like he called his son Gershon, we need to see ourselves as refugee, exile, being forced to live in a foreign land. And while we are here, on this foreign land, verses 16 to 22 onwards, in that seven verses, God trained Moses to be a shepherd. God trained Moses to be a shepherd. So if we put all this together, Moses was separated. Why? Because he was separated to be a shepherd. He was separated to be a shepherd. And we know that just like Moses, Jesus too refused the throne of this world when he was tempted by Satan. You would remember, Satan offered him the world, but Jesus refused. But Jesus chose us instead to be our shepherd, and he went to the cross for us. What is Jesus saying to each and every one of us today? Jesus is calling each and every one of us to be separated. And we are called saints. Saints means set apart. Set apart for his use. Aren't we? We are saints. Not perfect, but we are to be separated. And we are called to be a royal priesthood. We are priests. Priests are people who speak to God on behalf of man. That's the job of a priest. And the function of a prophet is to be God's mouthpiece. We speak to man on behalf of God. And Jesus has called all of us to be a saint, to be a priest, and to be a prophet. And that's the purpose why God has led us here on earth. Today, with this mission, and it's not optional, it's a command of Jesus to all of us, all of us. But the big question is, are you willing to obey? Are you willing to obey? Are you doing it? I hope you'll make the right choice, just as Moses did. He chose God, he chose to obey. God bless.